With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next conversation is with Moli Surya, an Indonesian filmmaker who was in Toronto recently to talk about her new film, Marlena, The Murderer in Four Acts. This is another Western we spoke about with two filmmakers about Five Fingers for Marseille earlier on in Face to Face, and hopefully you've already heard that interview. But Marlena, The Murderer in Four Acts is it's a powerful, provocative, and visually stunning film. On what Moli and others might call the feminist Western genre. This is a film that is so interesting. It's so entertaining. It really is visually stunning. It's gorgeous to look at. And Moli and I talk about how directing is writing with images. We talk about multiple possibilities and about gender injustice and violence and about men and their role in that, and why painting and Edward Hopper actually had a role to play in this film and how it looks. We talk about why this film is really about women's empowerment and how they have to fight back and almost, not appear defiant, but almost defy the status quo in a way that is meaningful and going to have a long-term impact. We also talk about, Moli and I, why this is a film really also about grief. We touch on so many things. It's such a delight to have this conversation. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you get a chance to see the film. DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my speaking and writing. FaceToFaceLive.ca for more interviews, especially focusing on the Toronto International Film Festival this year. And don't forget Rabble.ca for conversations and dialogue and writing around issues that matter. Coming right up, Moli Surya and her new film, Marlena, The Murderer in Four Acts. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by another very special guest today, a director, a filmmaker, in from Indonesia, I believe, here to highlight her new film, Marlena, The Murderer in Four Acts. Moli Surya is here with us today for a conversation. Moli, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, no worries, David. Yeah, it's my pleasure.
So, first of all, congratulations on the film and congratulations on the festival. And tell me a little bit about how that experience is going. We need to hear a little bit from you on that.
Okay. Thank you very much. I mean, like, it's been a great experience so far. Yesterday was it, or 2 days ago, was our North American premiere in Toronto International Film Festival, which is my first time in Toronto.
My
first time in Canada.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Welcome to Toronto.
Yeah. It is so far away from home.
Yes, indeed.
I have to mention it. It took me maybe like around 20-ish hours to get here by flight. Yeah,
it's a long flight. I've been to Indonesia a couple of times, and
it's
a long way.
Isn't it?
It's a long way.
long way. And you have this huge island that, you know, I'm on top of Canada already, but then I haven't got there already.
How did the premiere go?
The premiere went great. There's a lot of people coming. I mean, it was full. It was a 9:45 screening, so I was surprised that it was full. And most of everyone stayed for the Q&A, and they asked these very great questions. And I think it's the best Q&A I've had so far.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, it's certainly quite a celebrated film so far. And again, congratulations on it. It's a gorgeous film. I mean, and who doesn't like a Western, you know? It seems to me you've really taken it. Is it fair for me to say that you've taken the Western and kind of turned it on its head a little bit?
Yeah, in a way, yeah. I kind of make my own thing on that. Yeah, I mean, like, everybody, I think, especially film students. I mean, when I was a student, I saw a lot of Westerns. Like,
sure.
I mean, like, it's part of the platter. And and I think what I'm trying to do with it was trying to find my... But, well, the thing is because I find the genre was sort of the tool instead of the other way around. It's because I find the story first and then...
Sure.
I find the genre instead of the other way around. It's not that I want to make a Western film and then I find the story to fit into this Western film. If you know what I mean.
I think I do know what you mean. You don't kind of try to it's less, I guess it's less contrived that way, maybe. You talk about in an article that I read directing as writing with images and how technical screenplay writing is. Does that have something to say to your comment about, you know, you don't find the genre first, you find the story first?
Yeah, I think it connects a lot with that. I mean, like, because we decided about the genre, of course, during the writing the screenplay. I was writing the screenplay with the producer of the film, Rama Adi, one of the producers of the film. And, yeah, so we kind of decided on the genre on that bit. And that's true. I mean, like, I don't know, writing screenplays is, of course, it's very technical. It has a lot of, how do I say this? It makes filmmaking somehow doesn't sound as cool as...
That's pretty
as
funny.
A
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it is a painstaking process, I think. I think screenwriting is more like about, like, building a... Like you're drawing like an architect instead of someone with a painting and then... You find the creative juice or whatever. I think screenplay is more like an architect. Not that architects are very creative as well. Of course, there's a lot of beautiful buildings.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, Molly, that you bring up the idea of painting. I couldn't help but think how the cinematography is gorgeous. It's stunning, and it's it's not the Indonesia I visited. That's for sure. Location.
Yeah.
It looks like we're kind of in. We're in the desert, you know, and it's got...
It's like a poor version of Texas or something, right?
Right.
it's
good, it's good.
Yeah,
but it's so, I guess that was really intentional on your part to sort of say, the way the landscape plays into the film, but what I was going to say is that the shots, I mean, you hold some of these takes, or long takes, but they're gorgeous, they're stunning, they're engaging and very compelling, and they could play as paintings. Was there an inspiration there for you on this, like a still painter? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I worked with this cinematographer throughout my career. I mean, like, we've worked together for 3 films already, so we kind of had our own way of working together, and I've discussed the paintings. I mean, like, I told him how I wanted the colors to be like the Baroque, I don't know if I say it right, but the Baroque paintings. And then he came up with this idea about the lighting in the Caravaggio painting, again with the pronouncement, I'm sorry. English is my second language.
That's okay.
Yeah. And we also talk about the paintings of Edward Hopper. So,
oh, okay.
So there's a lot of references around that. So we've always been talking about Edward Hopper from film number one. So it's been a constant presence in our work. But then for me, honestly, I always think that maybe because I really trust him as a cinematographer, was that we didn't do any storyboards or anything, because even though it looks like it is something that is storyboarded, but we don't actually use it at all. We kind of it was quite a. When we went to Sumba for the exterior shots, it was quite a, how do I say this? It's quite a smaller team that
right.
we usually have in shootings, because it kind of had, it's really tricky to access the place. So we were quite like a smaller team, not really small team, but small team. So it's kind of more like a simple shoot. And I think we kind of work on that. I think the cinematography as well. I mean, for example, because it's not really, because the island is not really accessible, they don't have any film equipment.
Right.
So, for example, you want to bring a track, then you have to bring it all the way from Bali. And then I decided that, you know what, I don't want any camera movement in the film. So we just bring a tripod, you know, a very easy way to...
Yeah.
Yeah. which is making the editing so much harder. so much challenging, because then every cut is so important when you don't have a camera movement at all.
How does Molly? How does that still camera? How does that still shot in your mind now? How has it played into the way the story of Marlena and is told? Because to me, this is so much more than just a Western. It's a great Western.
Yeah.
It's engaging. It's entertaining. And I mean, I saw it as a thriller too, in some respects, but a very understated one. But anyway, how does that stillness play into this story?
Well, that kind of stillness, I think it's kind of showing when you say that there's so many elements in the film. I must agree. I mean, like, I don't know how to put it inside certain boxes. But
right.
I think because of the stillness, it kind of fits into the box of Asian films as well, because that kind of stillness is kind of how Asian films are. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. No. I do think I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, what was the question again?
How that stillness, how that, you know, some people call it a slow cinema, and I'm not sure that's a fair comment. But how does that, do you think, play into this story for me as the viewer? How is that going to impact me on what I take away? I mean, this is a story about empowerment and about family and love and loyalty and violence and gender injustice. I mean, there's so many things going on here.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me to get behind those kinds of decisions that, you know, that you as a cinema, as a director and your DOP make.
Yeah, it's. I think it makes the message kind of more subtle in a way. That kind of stillness in the film. That's how I look at it now. I mean, I don't know whether how I look at it in 2 years, but then it's now I look at it, because you know when it's been 2 years, you usually have more objectivity in your own work. So right now, how I see it is how it kind of helps the film to become what it is now. Because I wanted it that way. Because the first time when I approached the story, because the story is somewhat violent, and I don't really want to, how do I say this? I don't really want the film to stay into one side instead of the other, if you know what I mean. I mean, I still want to be approached. I mean, like, I want people to see her more as someone who is actually, you know, someone that you can relate to, someone
that you can,
someone more mysterious instead of someone that is like a hero, like a very sassy hero. How, you know, it's when it's more stylish, when it's more violent, you will feel a very different way to Marlena as a character, because she doesn't really speak much. So it's the surrounding, it's how she brings herself it's actually what shaped the character in a way, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
No, it's good. It's good. Yeah, well, yeah. I was gonna say it's so interesting. She has, you know. This is about voice and about identity and about women and so on and empowerment and all that. And she's such a woman, a person of so few words, and yet she has such a powerful character and a powerful presence. And I felt right from the get-go that, you know, there was some bad things that were going to happen, but she still was in control. I still felt like she's going to be okay. You know, like she's going to figure this out somehow. I just had that sense, this the strength that she had. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, it's she's not, you know, not for once that she, even though she appears more like in that stillness, I think, you know, it really makes her, you know, making that impression.
Yes.
Because she's not. How do I say this? I mean, yes, maybe she's scared in a way, and. You're kind of trying to figure her out, like, all throughout the film.
Yes, yeah, you said mysterious, and she is absolutely, she's kind of that the cowgirl with no name, and yet she has a name, right?
Yeah, true.
So what for you now, you know, film is done, you've seen it many times, I'm sure you've read some of the reviews, you've had lots of Q&A. What is the film about for you now? What is the film, what is the story for you now about? I mean, is it really about violence against women? Is it really about gender injustice in, you know, not just in Indonesia, but in the world?
In a personal way? I saw the film in a way, it's, of course, a celebration of feminism, I would say. You know, it's not something that we should argue about anymore. I think it's more about the celebration of that. In a way, I saw it that way. I saw it as a fun celebration, if stillness could be considered fun. But then
right.
Then, you know what? The film was fun,
of
right?
Course. Well, it is, and it almost makes me uncomfortable to say that it's fun, because there's, you know, it's a pretty serious film, right? But there's some great comedic moments, and there's just the absurdity of it. But you know what? To me, Molly, it's also a great love story. It really is. Like, there's this undercurrent of the relation. I mean, just that beautiful, intimate, simple shot of her leaning her head on the shoulder of her husband, her dead husband, is just, it's a beautiful, tender moment. And it just, and we don't know anything about their history. And yet it seems to me like we know everything about their history in that moment. You know, it's really beautiful. Yeah.
That's actually, that scene was interesting with that, because it was not scripted. Okay. It was added like on shoot.
Interesting. Isn't that great? Yeah. Well, you know what's kind of cool is in that article that I read about you and screenwriting and directing and so on, you talk about this notion of multiple possibilities. And you know, like stepping outside of that technical screenwriting. Clearly you guys were able to really do that with this story and this film.
Yeah, the thing is, when you write and direct, I think it's really, when you write, you have to forget that later you're going to direct it. It's, even though it's already a sure thing, because we work in a very, we have a small company in Indonesia, and we already know that we are going to be into production maybe in a few months. But then when all these, So that's how, like, for example, that scene that we were talking about came about, was because when we've already done writing it, I kind of make editing and changes on the set. Like, it's probably slight. Like, I know where, you know what I mean. It's very ongoing, and it is very technical sometimes, you know, because then you would see how sometimes it doesn't fit the screen in a way. It sounds better, it sounds better on paper. Those kind of things happens a lot. Yeah, it's even one of the first images that I thought about the film actually didn't work when we shot it. It's so we kind of threw that away. It's because it's something that sounds good on paper. Like, I can imagine that. But then when you try to block it, when you try to make it work with the real locations, it didn't work.
When you said earlier, you commented about how this is a fun celebration of feminism. What did you mean by that? You kind of said also that, you know, it's not even something we need to talk about anymore. Does that mean that this is just it's not that we've arrived, but this is something we need to just understand and continue talking about? Is that kind of what you meant, or?
Yeah, it's something that, I mean, like, I'm talking about, of course, about women empowerment. I think it's time to stop to, I don't know, I mean, I've never been, like, very active in feminist activism, but then everyone said that all of my films are feminist. Well, of course, I mean, like, I'm a feminist, and I'm someone who is empowered or whatever, but then I think the idea is about equality, and the idea is about right and wrong in a film as a Western. So I think it is something that is, you know, it's no question. I mean, like, the woman has to fight back.
Right. Right.
Yes. And in order to, I mean, like, in fighting back and not be, I think that dialogue in the beginning is everything about the film. When Marcus came and said that women like playing victims and
right.
all that.
All the assumptions about the culture and about women and men. And yeah, we learned so much in those few moments.
Yeah, I think in those first few minutes, I think that's one of the key to, I think, the themes to the film that is really, really important that I really wanted to say, and how she defies all that. And I think it's you know, that's why I said it's celebration in a way. But in a way, to continue that question, that answer, actually, in one side, it is a celebration, but in a personal way, I think the film is about grief, in a way.
Mm.
It is about my grief. Actually, my father passed away, like, a couple of months before the shoot.
So I'm so sorry to hear that. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a way for me to connect with Marcia, the girl who play, the woman who played Marlena. She also has lost a parent a long time ago, and we kind of connect with that, and then we kind of talk about how our mothers experience the grief, and how different is that kind of grief with that, you know, when you lose a spouse, when you lose a partner, after so many times being together. After such a long time being together.
What's so interesting about the way that you, I think, portray that in the film is through her dead husband, who's very much a character in the film, and yet we know nothing about him, and he keeps returning, you know, his actual body keeps returning in the film, and this sense that there's all of this history and all of these, I guess, all this stuff that's unexplained. Right. Mm. And and we're back to that whole sort of mystery and that kind of wonder around. And isn't that kind of what death is really? I mean, there's so much about that we don't know. Right. We want to speak with intelligence about something like death. And yet no one really knows how they're going to experience grief. My father passed away a couple of years ago. He'd been struggling with Parkinson's disease all of his life. And you're never quite prepared. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And this is and for her, Marlene, I guess in the film, Marlena's is some of you coming out in Marlena's character, would you say?
Maybe, yeah, in a way. I think even though if you meet me, I'm more like a Novi instead of Marlena. I mean, I'm not that quiet.
Right.
Yeah, because I don't know, in a way, but that grief, I think, I think, you know, it's a way for me to really relate to the film until now.
Yes, yes.
And to find that grief and to find that Marlena. Because the thing is, Marlena is very hard to describe. I mean, like, me and the actress, Marcia, we don't really talk about it. We don't really make a backstory about Marlena.
Right,
like, when
you
said, like, what happened to this couple? We don't know.
Right, interesting.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really make it up. I mean, like, I don't really like creating backstory unless it is really necessary for the narrative, for them to find some sort of reason to do this and to do that. But then, if the this backstory, we don't really create it. It's just that in the culture, if that the body is like that, it's around like maybe 3 months, like, because that's usually what they do.
Right.
After 3 months, they will move him into a coffin and so on.
Right. To what degree are you dealing with superstition in this film. Would you say that's a part of this story? The, you know, the carrying of the head and the body and the, and just, and the, well, maybe not superstition, but tradition.
It's actually both. I mean, like, I think in the tradition, there's a lot of, it's really connected to the superstition, because, I mean, like, I'm really talking from a very objective point of view, because when I went to this island the first time, they have so many cultural elements that is very interesting.
Right, but then, right.
Yeah, but the tricky thing about Indonesian culture is because we have so much of it, we don't have much of actual data and actual facts that you can read, that you can go to the library and check.
Right.
What you can do in Indonesia is actually you have to travel, you have to go to the village, and you have to ask the elders. And then when I ask why they do this, why they do certain things, like, for example, have you been to Sumba?
I have not. I've been spent some time in Jakarta, Bali, Lombok. And I think that's about it over the years.
Well,
yeah,
like Bali is very specific as well. I mean, like, it has a very specific culture as well, and Sumba is a lot like that, even though it's a lot different. The religion, the main religion, is animism, even though you would find Catholics and Christian as well. And they have, I mean, like, when I ask them why you do certain things, they will just say that it is what the elders do. It is what our ancestors do.
Right.
It is that simple for them. And, and I think I, in a way, I admire that, and I criticize that as well.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But then I admire that simplicity as well, that genuine, you know, it's very genuine. It's
yes.
You know.
Yep.
And I think that's what I want to capture in the film. Like, I'm using those kind of elements. Like, for example, the plot where Nof Yi, you know, that she keeps saying that if the baby is a bleach baby.
Yes.
And then that means that she was being unfaithful. And
that's
kind of like the saying that they have in those village.
So. Yeah. There's a great scene where, by the way, their performances are just astounding. It speaks to the writing and your level of direction. I'm amazing performances, really, really quite remarkable and so engaging right from the get go. I was drawn in. Marcus says something to the effect of, you know, when he's right near, like you said at the opening, where he's almost berating her, you know, invades her home and says, hey, where's the coffee? Where's the bell leaves? I mean, aren't you going to prepare me some food? I mean, he's demanding, he's disrespectful, he's a sexist, he's all of these, and he's a criminal, clearly. But he says something to the effect of, women, you all love playing victim. Is that something, would you say, is sort of ingrained in Indonesian culture or cultures, I guess is a better way to put it, because there's so many cultures within, you know, the country of Indonesia? Or were you kind of making more of a comment towards men's understanding of women in general, would you say, that gender gap, if you will?
You know, I think it's a bit of both. I mean, like, because, say, for example, I'm kind of saying something there, but, you know, what you said. But then, but also it applies to the Indonesian culture, not just Sumba culture in general. It's more, but in Indonesia, it's a lot like that. I mean, like, for example, you will hardly see in the film Marlina entering the house. I mean, I think it's just once when someone was waiting for her in the end.
Yes.
But then she actually never enters the house from the front door.
Right.
Both her and Novi. And that's actually the culture in Sumba. Everybody has to enter. The woman usually enters the house from the back door.
Right.
From the kitchen. Yeah. And I think in a way you kind of see how the society works over there. When Marco said that, like, he's always asking for the man of the house.
Right.
Who's in charge here? Yeah, who's in charge here?
Yeah.
And
she's
not, even though she owns the house.
That's right.
So, in a way, yes, I'm talking about the idea of, you know, it's in Indonesia. I mean, things are good. I mean, things are getting better,
sure.
Of course.
Yep.
Especially my generation, we have a lot of strong women. We even had a woman president once, and how do I say this? But still, sometimes things are looking down. I mean, like,
yeah,
sometimes
yeah.
I think it's not getting better, but it's getting worse. Well, it got better a couple of years ago. So it's,
well,
in
I
a
think,
way,
is it fair to say that, I mean, you're clearly, I was going to say, is this a road movie? And in a way, it's kind of a road movie buried in a Western, if you want to stick it into some sort of genre, which I'm sure you probably don't want to do. But I love the way you use these long, these exterior shots with conversations that are going on that we don't actually see, but we see the person in the distance walking along a road or the bus, these beautiful, gorgeous shots. This is a journey. This is we're getting there. We with steps forward, steps backwards. Right? Is that fair?
Yeah. You could say that. Yeah.
Yeah. The way too that you. I mean, clearly you're speaking. I would imagine to the culture itself, but it's a global problem. But you the way you present or portray the police officers in this film, the way you present government and that whole legal system is quite comical and yet tragic at the same time.
Yeah, in a way, it's trying to say something that's but how to do it. I mean, like, I'm trying to do it in a because that's what happens, maybe they don't play ping pong. I think
listen, I have to say, Molly, the ping pong in the background is one of my favorite moments in the film. It's absurd.
It's an idea that takes a while for the crew for my crew to actually get. I mean, like, there's usually no ping pong in, there won't be any ping pong table in a police station. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, like, yeah, but I want one in it.
But that's kind of the point, yes.
Yeah, that's kind of like the point. To just say quickly how I perceive what the audience is going to perceive that is going to happen. And I think you would know, I mean, like, the moment that you saw them playing ping pong, what is going to happen
Is it really, you hear stories like this. I've been working in sort of this, the development sector for years, and most of my listeners know I teach at Humber College in Toronto. These kind of issues are forefront. I have a woman who works specifically, she's a gender, I guess you could call her a gender consultant. She works with nonprofits and NGOs and so on. Is it really as bad as that, the portrayal of this police officer? Yes, sorry, we're not going to have the proper tools for another month to be able to properly get the evidence. There's just no care. There's no concern for her at all.
Well, the thing is, it's based in those kind of rural areas. It's like, it really depends on luck. Sometimes you got what, you know what I mean? It really depends on the person. It really depends on the certain small police officers, because you can't check them. I mean, like, the center wouldn't be able to check them. It's the integrity of each police officer. But then, how I perceived it is that particular scene, it is actually, what you said earlier, it's representing the government in a way.
Yes.
I think that's how I perceive the government, was that, it's Sumba Island is in the east. Hold on, I don't know how to translate it, like the East Nusa Tenggara. And it is the poorest province of Indonesia. Indonesia is already poor, and it is the poorest province. And if you see how not developed, I mean, like, the first public school is only in 1982 or in 1981.
Wow, yeah.
And I was like, wow, how... I mean, like, the first, there's a lot of private schools which are bought and built by the Catholics, which is wonderful.
Yes.
But then the government itself has only entered the island and built schools there in 1981, and I think that's awful. And I think what were you doing, playing ping pong or something?
It's good.
So yeah, it's trying to say that it's more about that. I think it's not specifically if you have a rape case in Sumba Island, that's what is going to happen.
Right.
It's more about representing that.
Well, and I think the reality is that kind of thing is still going on. Well, I mean, I think it's going on around the world, and I think your comment about it seems like we're moving forward and things are getting a little better, and then something happens and we get more news or something extreme happens and we feel like we've taken a few steps back. And but I think I love the fact that you kind of have commented about the education and about the lack of it and so on, because isn't that hopefully what's going to change a whole lot of this, you know, this having that conversation, which would deal with the Marcuses at a younger age, right? And get to him when he's younger. It's just what I love, and we're going to have to wrap it up here in a second, Molly, but what I love so much is that you've taken some incredibly serious, very contextual issues, and you've given them a face and a name and a space, and in a really fun and entertaining space to engage with these things, you know.
I kind of felt guilty now, you know, talking about serious subjects, but then in a fun way. I'm taking those kind of issues very seriously.
It's very clear to me, and you've done it in such a beautiful and stylish and fun way. And then the music, we haven't even talked about the music. I mean, the music is just marvelous, and how it plays into the tension and the suspense that you've been able to create as well. It's just before we wrap up, what's next for you? Are you going to be taking on something quite as serious next time around?
I don't know. I always believe that all my previous films are funny as well. The first one, sometimes people don't get it. The second one, people are more getting it. And now in the third film, people are really getting it. Yeah.
Right.
Because, but in a way, it's what I wanted to do. I don't know. We're still going back and forth with the producers of what we're trying to do next. But I want to make, Malina is my first co-production film. We could produce with France, with Thailand, with Malaysia, and I really wanted to do that again because I think it really brings the film in a more internationally related, international audience are more related to it because of the co-productions, because of the many different point of views that came when we developed the script.
Well, I just want to again say congratulations, and I wish you all the success with this film. I hope it gets wide distribution and that everyone sees it. We've been talking with Molly Syria about her new film, Marlena the Murderer, in four acts, playing at the Toronto International Film Festival. Thanks so much for your time today, Molly. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate it as well.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.